Hello and welcome to Nikan Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest Nikan news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. It's Constantine here, and here is
Becky.
Finally, we're introducing ourselves again.
Yeah, we forgot last week.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a busy week. There's so much Z9 information out. I think there's like 24 hours of videos on YouTube that you can go through and probably 1,000 pages of articles written about the camera. So we carefully curated a lot of things, but also we left a lot out. So I think on the slower weeks, we will slowly reintroduce them. So we're not going to talk about Nikon financials. You can thank me personally. And the SEPA numbers as well. So we're going to leave them out, but maybe next week, who knows?
Otherwise, this podcast is going to be like 5 hours long, and I don't think I can handle that.
Yeah. Becky, I heard you write books. So I wonder if you have a Z9 book in the pipeline.
I don't. However, I'm sure that someone does. David Bush normally does them.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure Tom Hogan will have one out at some point as well.
Exactly. Let's get the camera in our hands first, shall we?
Absolutely. Well, we had a camera in our hands and we really liked it and we hope to get it back again. But before we go to the Z9, let's talk about promotions.
Yes, we have instant savings for winter in the UK, Europe and the USA. In the UK, you can save up to £180 on some of the Z line.
That's pretty good.
And I believe the D850, D780 are on there as well. Some F-mount lenses, Z lenses. We don't obviously have all the details of the European and USA ones, but you can find it online. So if you're in the market for something new and shiny, then do have a look there.
In the B&Hs of the world. But yeah, that will run till mid of January, I think. Yeah?
17th.
Yeah, so plenty of time to save up. Get your Z or F mount gear.
Just not the Z9. That's not on there.
Not Z9. Or no promotions. Not yet. Speaking of Z9, we have a whole week of Nikon presence in our store. So today, Rob McNeese is in the store showing Z9 to the customers. Yep. So obviously you've missed that, but we will have a quick interview with him and he will tell us about his experience with the camera. And then on Friday,
we have Rishi. He's going to be here streaming with us on Friday afternoon. So it's UK time 2:15. Do not miss it. If you are subscribed, you can hit the little bell icon and it will notify you when we go live. But we're going to have him with the Z9. We're going to be asking him questions and it's going to be great.
Absolutely. So with Rob, we're going to ask him about his experience. Now with Richie, if you've got any seriously technical questions, do email us or write down in the comments below because we want to ask him tough questions. He had the camera like forever.
Well, he's had it for a little while, yeah.
Yeah, so he definitely had an experience with that. So let's do that. So there's so much information out on Z9 that a lot of professional photographers finally sharing their experience with the camera. So first one up is Joe McNally.
On assignment in the desert.
In the desert.
With a horse with no name. On a horse with no name.
Absolutely. Well, that talks about how robust the camera is because a lot of guys who tested the camera after Joe McNally, they say the dust and sand was caked in into the body and the Z9 was still going strong.
Wow. Amazing. Then we've got Z9 First Impressions with Seth Rishi and Matt Irwin. So Matt Irwin's YouTube channel hosts a sort of round table discussion about the Z9 and he has some top names in there. So do go and check that out if you'd like a sort of comprehensive view from them.
Absolutely. It's the only place you can see Australia, USA and UK in one place together.
That's right.
And then we had also discussion with Tom Hogan and Mark Common from Paul's Photo. Mm-hmm. Tom Hogan has a whole presentation on the camera. Very detailed, very long, but if you want to know about the camera, definitely do have a look at it. I think maybe next week we're going to talk about it in detail because there's so much information that I want to go through. It's probably will take us also 2 hours just to go through that.
Great. We also have a Z9 buffer test by Matt Granger. He calls it his proof. So if you'd like to go and have a look at how the Z9 buffer performs, then head over to Matt's channel.
Absolutely. And then also we mentioned Rich's video last week as well. If you haven't looked at it, have a look again. And then we also have a couple of articles. So DP Review has an article where they call in Z9 is the most DSLR-like mirrorless camera. And they just say that it's the viewfinder, the electronic viewfinder, almost feels like an optical viewfinder. And just overall feel of the camera is so good that if you're switching from DSLR, like let's say D5 or D6, you will feel in the right place. What they say is basically, simply put, the Z9 offers one of the best viewfinder experience of any camera in the market. In some ways, it's the most DSLR-like experience in Miller's camera universe, while also providing the experience a cut above even the likes of Sony N1 with its nominally higher resolution 9.44 million electronic viewfinder. Now, there's a whole debate on the internet about the electronic viewfinder and the higher resolution.
Right.
Now, Z9 has a low-resolution viewfinder itself. However, it's not just the actually little LCD that's inside. Mm. It's all the optics that are inside the viewfinder, which makes the whole experience a lot better. And also readouts.
Yeah.
So a lot of those cameras like A1, while they have high-resolution screen, in the sports performance or boost performance, they actually switch to low resolution to give a faster readout.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I've heard this.
So if you think about it, yes, you can have a high resolution screen, but actually, if you're in sports, you still have to downgrade it. And then if your optics inside the EVF are not that good, then it doesn't matter what resolution you have because it's not going to feel as natural as Z9 viewfinder.
Right. So Z9 is better than A1, is that what we're saying?
Well, we don't say anything, but...
I've actually not looked through a Sony A1 viewfinder to have an opinion on it.
Well, me neither, since we're a Nikon dealer, we don't have A1s lying around. But it's an interesting take from DP Review. And obviously, they have the camera now. They say they're going to do more tests and they'll tell us what they think about it. And now another test was done by Dread Demon at Nikon Rumors, and he had a Z9 dynamic range test.
He said it's a very basic test. I think this is just, you know, a little bit like us, a short experience with the camera, maybe for a day or so. To put it through its paces. I mean, he says the Z9 uses a sensor that looks very similar to the one in the Z7. That alone is a brave decision because up until now, the top cameras for photojournalists from Nikon's and others have used special sensors tuned to high ISO performance, which is very true.
Yeah.
We see that in the D5 and the D6, for example, D4, D4S. Personally, I'm very happy with that decision because the gains at very high ISO values were relatively small and the loss of dynamic range at low ISO was relatively large. It looks like the Z9 sensor offers the best of both worlds, as did, in fact, the sensor of the Z7 too.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to add from the discussions that we mentioned above. So Ricci says that low light performance is better than that Z7 Mark II.
Interesting.
So that's number one. Number two, Tom Hogan says, well, on paper, the sensors look similar, obviously, because of the resolution. Mm. Actually, obviously, one is stacked. That's the main difference. But also the design itself is very different. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but it seems that Sony did not manufacture Z9 sensor. It looks like it's Taojia semiconductors.
Right.
So I guess more time will pass and we'll find out exactly. But the design, actual design and schematics are very different.
Interesting.
Obviously, places like DxOMark and Photons to Photons, once they do their test on Z9, they can publish a proper chart showing the dynamic range. And then we will be able to compare it with cameras like Z7, Z6, but also A1s of the world, etc. So more information to come. Stay tuned on that one.
Absolutely. We also have another article by Antonio Di Benedetto at Verge, who says the Nikon Z9's new sensor could be the start of a big shift in photography.
It's very interesting because it's such a huge release that we have now big kind of gadget-oriented publications like Engadget, The Verge, ArcTech, etc. They all write about Z9. Mm. And this article is particularly interesting because obviously they say, well, look, it's the first camera that has such a fast processor that can lead towards computational photography. Let's look at the autofocus first.
Yes.
Obviously, machine learning and AI is involved in recognizing how many objects and people and birds or what you name it the camera can recognize. I think Nikon claims that it's the camera that can recognize the most objects in the world, you know, bicycles, cars, motorcycles, obviously people, fish, eyes, you know, you name it. If you talk about AI involved in autofocus, which is really good, and it seems like Nikon is the best at it at this stage.
At this moment in time, they are a cut above the rest.
Now, a lot of those cameras, the phone cameras, the little ones with the tiny sensors, can do a lot of computational photography, like doing multi-exposures to get better details and shadows and highlights, HDR type of things, you know. So things like Android and iPhones, they can blur the background, you know. And it's all done pretty much in real time.
And also the animal recognition, face recognition, etc. They do all that as well.
Exactly. Now, the interesting bit is obviously the camera, like Z9, the files are much larger.
Considerably.
So if you take an HDR, let's say, doing 3-5 shots.
Yeah.
You have to take all those shots, keep it in the buffer, then the processor has to process this and send the image together. Yeah. So there's a lot of work that's involved. And what they talk about is that Z9 actually has one of the fastest processes for the camera. So we start to think about the cameras like computers.
Mm.
So what do you think? Is it good or bad? I mean, obviously, as a purist of ours, we would say, no, get it in camera and do the rest on the computer, whatever, you know. But do you think it's good to have this mobile phone functionality in our cameras?
I think that maybe not so much good and bad, but necessary at this point, because there are an awful lot of people who use their smartphones as their serious photography cameras. There are whole courses on the internet. There are whole Instagram accounts dedicated to how to get the best out of your iPhone for photography, for example. And phone companies are obviously putting better and better technology into their phones. So if you're going to have someone that's moving from phone photography to cameras, if they're going to take that step, the camera needs to be able to do what the phone does, but way, way better. Otherwise, what's the point in them moving up?
Because I want to say, you know, people say, but actually you said that my iPhone recognizes the borders
of my cats.
Of your cats.
Even if they're not looking at the camera.
Yeah. And Z9 is the first Nikon camera that does this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it is interesting that even for you...
Even for me, because it was something that I noticed straight away, having used the Z50 and the Z6 and many, many other Z cameras, any Z camera that comes along, I have that obligatory shot of my cat.
That's true. I think when we think about our phones, we really think that they're small computers.
Yeah.
And that's why they can do lots of things. We don't really think the same way about the cameras that we use.
Mm.
And I think they do become a little computers with a sensor attached to them.
Yeah.
And in terms of this, I think it's good to expect the things. And obviously the purist in us will make sure that we won't use those features. But a lot of people come into photography from the mobile phones. They will ask those questions. Where is this feature on my camera?
Exactly. So although I don't necessarily think it's a good or a bad thing that we're starting to see cameras become more like computers than anything else, I think that it's a necessary move if we want to bring more people into the photography fold in general.
Absolutely. I'm very glad we had this conversation, because obviously we talked about 2 years now that our market is shrinking, and think about very expensive hi-fi tools, which has very little dedicated niche, but a lot of people don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras kind of become...
Started to become like that.
Absolutely. And then if you start to introduce those features, the mobile phone features into the cameras, then I think it will bring more people in. Because once you play with those, and those are £1,000 items.
Yeah, true.
And you like the photography, maybe you start to consider a better camera with a bigger sensor.
Mm-hmm.
But that does literally the same thing.
Exactly.
And obviously professional photographers will use their RAW and they will do their things, get it right in camera, and then edit on the computer. A lot of the people, you'll just press a button and they'll be happy with the shots they've taken.
I think this is what makes the Z9 kind of blur the lines a little bit as well. Because obviously it does have a professional price tag.
Yeah.
It would be an incredible luxury item for someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But you and I have already had people who are entry-level photographers who have the extra cash because they're retired or because they're wealthy or whatever.
Absolutely.
Or because they have amazing jobs. And they say, yeah, I don't need a Z9 to take pictures of my, you know, my kids playing football, but I can afford one and it will make my photography so much easier. So I think it's kind of also one of those cameras that, although it's designed for pros, is very much blurring the lines of an amateur can use this camera and still get great results.
Absolutely. And obviously that tells us that a lot more to come from Nikon as well in the future.
For sure.
And if this technology already exists, then it will start to trickle down to the cameras below. Obviously, we would need to wait and see what's going to happen. And the wait is probably the worst part of it. So, but it tells a lot of people as well, well, maybe, yes, if Z9 is not for me, and for some people, it's the weight issue, because it is not a light camera.
Nope.
You know, they will patiently wait for their Z6 and Z7 Mark IIIs perhaps, or potentially Z8.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about pre-orders and production numbers. Obviously, pre-orders are through the roof. Chinese social media websites reporting that the pre-orders are around 40,000. I don't know if it's a worldwide situation or just in China. So I don't think they would be able to grasp the, you know, kind of the whole world pre-order list. But that's what they report. And then Nikkei, which is Japanese publications, says that Nikon will produce about 3,500 Z9s a month.
Oh, dear.
So if we have 40,000 pre-orders and 3,500 cameras in production, that tells us that a lot of people will have to wait for their Z9.
Yes, for quite some considerable time. Now, Eamon Hickey of Nikon Rumors has an interesting point. He said, just a comment, because it looks like people think 3,500 is what Nikon can produce rather than what they're choosing to produce. Nikon could have planned a production system to make 25,000 or even 50,000 Z9 cameras in a month. At one time, Nikon was manufacturing upwards of 600,000 interchangeable lens cameras every month, almost all of them in the Thailand factory where they still make their ILCs. Now, I have a comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that in the last year, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
They're not at peak production level, partly because of COVID and staff shortages, partly because of the chip shortage. I mean, there's huge factors. So they can't just decide to produce more cameras.
Absolutely. Obviously, those factors also meant that Nikon was sitting on their release of the cameras for quite some time,
mm-hmm.
which made a lot of people upset, because obviously ZFC did really well and sold a ton.
Yeah.
And then we have Z9 now, which is pushing the technology. And we heard that the camera's supposed to be announced in September.
Well, it was an Olympics release, supposedly, which then didn't happen. Eamon goes on to say they chose 3,500 per month because they think it's a good match to the actual sustained market for this camera. Obviously, they know the launch demand will be higher, but they can't plan a production system based on the initial 2 to 3 month sales potential. If it turns out that the Z9 sells at a better sustained rate than 3,500 per month, Nikon can rather quickly increase the output by maybe up to 20 to 25%. Beyond that, they would have to invest a significant amount of money in additional manufacturing capacity for it.
Absolutely. So a couple of things to take away from here. So when the camera is going to be released, which currently indication is mid-December, there's not going to be 3,500. There's going to be more. So because the camera will be in production for at least 2 months or something like this. So we potentially may have 7,000 cameras that would go out straight to the customers who pre-ordered. Now, 3,500 for the camera that's priced at $6,000,
mm-hmm.
you know, or 5,300 in UK, including VAT, it's actually a good number, because it's not supposed to sell the same as, let's say, G3500 camera or Z6.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to do that. So it's a good indication of the camera. And obviously, because it's such a professional product, it's top of the range and it's not the cheapest.
Yeah.
Then suddenly it makes 3,500 to 5,000 units made sense, because obviously there will be a very strong initial demand.
Mm.
But let's say 6-7 months down the road, it's probably will slow down. Now, as well, looking at D6, there's a lot of factors which affected the release of D6. Obviously, COVID was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But when D6 released, there was quite a lot of bad press, not based on the camera specifications and performance, but because people were saying, well, where's the mirrorless flagship?
Yeah.
So the tables have turned.
Mm-hmm.
And now Z9 reception is obviously amazing. Everyone wants one. But if you look at this type of the camera, they never sell in high volume. So it is a healthy indication of having 3,500 to 5,000 units production a month.
Well, let's hope that we get a generous allocation. That's all I can say.
Absolutely. And speaking of pre-orders, there is an article on Amateur Photography, which is UK publication, which is called Pre-orders for Nikon Z9 Are Insane, Says Nikon Dealer.
Yes.
Who is this Nikon dealer?
This Nikon dealer is us, actually. Amateur Photographer had an exclusive interview with Gray himself, and he talked about our experience after the launch date.
Absolutely. So if you want to read what happened in the trenches of Z9 release date, do read this article.
Yeah.
So let's move to the article. So DP Review published an article which is called Nikon Interview, Z9 Will Exceed Expectations for Every Genre of Photography and Video. There, they talked on Z9 launch event to Naoyuki Murakami, Executive Fellow and Sector Manager of Development Sector in Nikon's Imaging Business Unit, and they ask him some serious questions. Now, we're going to skip all the nonsensical questions they had. We're going to get to the nitty-gritty of the article, something that industry does, because, well, is Nikon in a better position now with Z9 than not? I think we all know the answer to that. So let's move on to the question that interested us.
Exactly. So first question was, what change in technology allowed you to bring 3D tracking to the Z9? I thought this was a very interesting one, because it's kind of like we needed this to happen in order for us to develop this technology and put it in the Z9. He said multiple technological developments were required to introduce high-performance 3D tracking into a mirrorless camera. It was made possible by improved basic performance by the high-speed readout from the image sensor. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about the image sensor shortly as well and the developments of that. He said, and significantly faster speed of the image processing of X-Speed 7, our new processing engine. Essentially, 3D tracking is realized through various high-performance technologies, and by efficiently linking those technologies together for high-speed continuous shooting at 20 frames per second, where the effectiveness of 3D tracking stands out, more accurate AF information and subject position information are required between shooting frames. So we're talking about the sensor and the processor kind of working together and those linked technologies.
Absolutely.
And the development of the X-Speed 7 really, and that stacked image sensor being the reason why we could get 3D tracking in the Z9.
So just to get that really, really fast speed, you need to have lots of parts working together to produce final results.
Exactly.
One of the questions they ask, which aspect of Z9's development represents the biggest challenge to the team? And the answer was real live viewfinder. It was pretty much impossible without incorporating dual stream technology in the image sensor and engine, which we mentioned before. And also they mentioned autofocus performance, which again beats everything out of the water, all manufacturers, all models at the moment.
Exactly. There were a few questions about different types of lighting and how the slower image sensor readout had caused issues for certain situations with shooting. But now, I mean, I don't know entirely why they asked that question.
That's right. So it's LED lighting in the concert. Yeah. And the problem with that was a bit of flicker, etc. So refresh rate of those lights. Now, the readout of the sensor is so fast that effectively for stills photography, it's almost eliminated the jelly effect. So because standard sensor records from top to the bottom. So in terms of this, because your readout is so fast, then effectively flicker reduction is effectively eliminated. And obviously you can activate flicker reduction in the camera as well. One thing actually a lot of people mentioned, we said it as well, when you take the first shot, you get a blackout for the first shot. It actually only works when the flicker reduction is enabled. If you don't get this, you have a little kind of little lines on the edges of the frame, and that tells you that you've taken a shot. So I think, yeah, we've done it. For the first time, we did this, and then when we reset the camera to factory default, it didn't do that anymore.
I see. Here's an interesting one. He said, the DP review asked, the pixel count of the Z9 is the same as the Z7 II. Will the Z9 be able to deliver the same image quality? And he answered, the image quality of the Z9 is superior to that of the Z7 II in a few different ways. For still images, the faster scan speed minimizes rolling shutter distortion, which we talked about. Additionally, there's also improved stability in automatic white balance, improved rendering of sunset scenes through higher performance of natural light auto white balance. There is also improved flash control when using all types of speed lights. This is something we haven't encountered yet, so it's interesting for him to say it. And the other benefits of the stacked sensor in X-Speed 7 to dynamic range and noise suppression. So there's actually quite a lot more to that
answer. Absolutely. Actually, one of the interesting comparisons that kind of spiked the discussion on the internet is the sync speed of 200 of a second and A1 has 400 of a second.
Right.
And sounds like a lot. Actually, in real life world, it's very little difference between the two. Now, HSS is available on all cameras with all the lighting, so that shouldn't be an issue at all.
It seemed a bit irrelevant in my opinion.
But one of the polarizing things was actually elimination of the mechanical shutter completely. Yeah. I want to ask you, Becky, and also our viewers, what do you think about this? I know that on the live, was it my live stream, Rob, our regular viewer, he was complaining. He says they can't eliminate the mechanical shots completely, but they did. So tell us what you think about this. Obviously, if you think about it, actually, it brings a lot of benefits.
I personally don't use the mechanical shutter in any of my cameras anymore. I did for a while have it on, and then I just found my workflow changed and I found it much more comfortable to have the silent shutter. I know you like to have the sound.
Yes.
You like to know you've taken a
photo.
Absolutely.
It's just the internal vibrations. I want to have it on my image, you know, so yeah.
But it was one thing that I really struggled with the D850 when shooting through the viewfinder rather than through live view. And
Ooh, you haven't tried D800 then.
D800 live view was something else though.
Oh yes.
So I personally welcomed it, but I also don't really like the addition of the shutter noise for the people that need it. I find it unnecessary. I can understand why they put it in
It's an interesting one. To be honest with you, I personally didn't pay attention to this. So when I read, well, there's no mechanical charter, and I kind of thought about it, do I have an opinion about it? I don't really miss it.
No.
Because a lot of people tend to put, it's a good thing they eliminated mechanical charter. This is the way it was going. No one talked about eliminating mechanical charter till Z9 came out.
Mm.
So there was a whole discussion on the internet about this. But it's gone now. I personally don't miss it. If you do let us know, because it's an interesting one. But it seems that the elimination of the mechanical shots actually brought a lot of benefits, and computational photography is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you miss it, do let us know. I think it's an interesting discussion to have.
It is. Another interesting question was, with a majority of manufacturing moved to Thailand and China, will Nikon maintain a manufacturing base in Japan at all in the future? Where he answered, production is concentrated at Nikon's production base in Thailand, but there is no change in quality. Made by Nikon quality is guaranteed. The Nikon Thailand factory was established in 1990 and has been manufacturing cameras and interchangeable lenses for approximately 30 years. So no panics there.
Yeah, it's not like it was an overnight change or anything.
No. He also said interchangeable lens production will continue at Tochigi Nikon Corporation in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
There are no plans to close Sendai Nikon. Sendai Nikon will continue to contribute to Nikon and its imaging business by manufacturing highly functional, high precision camera components and developing parts, production technologies and highly complex equipment.
Absolutely. We live in a global village.
Yes.
And while Nikon is truly a Japanese camera, and I'm sure that the whole research and development now happens in Japan, but also around the world, because we need to get feedback from everyone, from amateurs, from professional photographers. We need to get all this in. So where it's manufactured, it doesn't really matter. Of course, it is always nice when things are made, let's say, when I buy things made in UK or England, let's say, you know, my coffee grinder, manual coffee grinder, came from Scotland and it's hand manufactured.
Nice.
You know, I like to have a Japanese made pen. It's always nice to have, but at the same time, for electronics, it doesn't affect the performance and the quality control, which is Nikon is well known of. It's been there. Actually, Z9, there's a small picture. Someone moved the screen and it saw a little T in there. So it's highly likely that Z9 will be manufactured in Thailand.
Right. Interesting. Okay, this is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Why does AF micro adjustment option still exist in Nikon's mirrorless cameras? Because we've had the argument that it's not needed.
Yes.
He said, with mirrorless cameras, basically, there's no need to use the AF micro adjustment function since AF happens on the sensor side. However, mm-hmm. some customers have a need to make fine adjustments according to their tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Z series is equipped with this function to meet this need, as we always want to integrate customer feedback and maximize customization. So he's basically saying, you don't need to use AF fine tune, but if you want to, you can.
If you have a fine taste, you have a fine tune.
Yeah.
But actually, Tom Hogan, in his articles, write about fine-tuning mainly designed on mirrorless cameras for F-mount lenses.
Yes, exactly. I was going to say the only scenario in which we've needed to AF fine-tune anything has been a telephoto F-mount lens on a Z7.
Yeah, we actually had a couple of customers. Mm. Remember 300-28?
Yes.
We had to adjust and it was F-mount 300-28. So with introduction of new Z-mount lenses, it pretty much will eliminate the thing. But it is there. I think it will be important for at least next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So since people will be using F-mount lens on these cameras. So
yeah.
So in terms of this, it is there. It doesn't mean that you have to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Don't read too much into it. If you are interested in reading the rest of that interview, we will put a link in the description box and the podcast notes so that you can see the interview in full. But we've just picked the highlights.
Absolutely. So it's basically talks about state of Nikon post-pandemic.
Yes, that's also in there.
All right, let's talk about video. And that's something that we don't discuss enough because we not really videographers ourselves. Well, we have this small YouTube channel which just reached 10,000 subscribers, but we are not professional videographers. So
I'd love to be.
Yeah, I'd love to be. I'd love to have all the time in the world where I can have all those, you know, the rigs and all the you know, sliders and, you know, all sorts of things. But with our production, gimbal is good enough for us, isn't it?
Yes.
So the audio is another thing. But let's move on to the videos. Okay, so a couple of things. So obviously, 8K and 60 frames per second is coming through firmware update in 2022. So that's there. A couple of things I want to point out. The thermals. Obviously, to record 8K at 30 and also 60 frames per second for very long time. So we've eliminated this 59 seconds limit. So the thermals are really good. Obviously, the fast pipeline can read out without overheating. So this is really good. Now, so this interesting article on eoshd.com. Here's what he has to say.
He says, what? A mirrorless camera finally gets internal ProRes 422? Also, unexpectedly, it's Nick on to do it first. This is my impression, obviously. Mm. In my opinion, this is a complete game changer for mirrorless cameras, and no longer do we have to rely on external recorders or a Blackmagic Pocket cinema camera shorn of nice features like a full-frame sensor, weather sealing, IBIS, or cutting-edge autofocus. Hopefully, the Z9 is the tipping point to convince other Japanese manufacturers to finally follow suit with ProRes 422 and internal RAW on high-end cameras, breaking the reliance on H.264/H.265 codecs and give us a proper editing codec. That last bit is in capitals.
That's true. So shots fired.
Feels very passionate.
Absolutely. Internal RAW is really good. Before, you had to buy one of those Atomos Ninja things or Blackmagic things if you were serious into the photography. And obviously on cameras like Z6 and Z7, you also had to enable internal RAW by sending the camera to Nikon.
That's right.
For that. So it was a paid upgrade, £200. To be honest with you, £200 is not that much for videographers, side of things.
No, it's not. But it is the extra faff of having to send your camera off. Now the firmware update is going to be one that you can do from home. And I think it's a great move.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be a very capable video camera. Obviously, accessories would probably have to take much bigger load because, you know, the gimbals, you probably have to get a full-size gimbal, which probably will weigh about 2 kilos and then plus another 1.3 kilos
like
with a lens on it.
Gimbal.
Absolutely. But the image quality you can get out of it sounds like it's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely.
And then the last thing we're going to mention about Z9 is that the new accessories are starting to pop up. So we are now know that Kirk will be making the L plate for Z9. You can pre-order it with them now. There are no pictures on their website, but they will be making one.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
In other non-Z9 news, but on the new releases still, Rishi has put out a first look video on the Z100 to 400mm S.
As well as 24-120 f4.
Mm-hmm. We also have a video explaining the 100 to 400 inner balance technology by BH Vendor Videos. Mm-hmm. So do go and have a look at that if you have a moment.
Yeah, one of the things actually a lot of people mentioned with the Z lenses, complain about the size of the lenses, right? Because when we sold on mirrorless, we were saying everything's going to be smaller and lighter. Z9 is laughing at you.
Yeah.
But one of the things that Richie mentioned, one of the discussions he had, that part of the large size of the lens is to do with focus breathing.
Mm.
And you need the focus breathing when you're using the camera for video work.
Right.
So when you have two objects in a frame and you want to refocus from one to another, let's say two people talking to each other.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. And obviously another thing is completely different designs. Optical design of 1.8 lenses outperforms a lot of 1.4 lenses, even from Nikon or other brands.
Yeah.
If you want to look at those lenses, do have a look at them, read up. We're hoping to get more information out. And hopefully when we get the lenses to test, we definitely will share it with you.
Absolutely. In other news, Nikon is building a new headquarters in Tokyo. They're pleased to announce the plan of a construction of vacant land.
I'm sorry, the pre-order money already been spent.
There we go. They're pleased to announce the plan of the construction of a new head office in a vacant... Did you write this or did they write this?
No, it's Nikon Japan wrote this.
For God's sakes,
and,
okay.
And Google translated it very
fantastic.
Nicely.
Fantastic. So they're pleased to announce the plan of construction of a new head office on vacant land on the premises of the Oi plant in Shinagawa-ku.
Yeah, look at that. Looks fancy.
Yeah. So they've commenced specific consideration. I don't know what that means.
Well, I guess they talked to everyone and they got their permission.
Yeah, they're building a growth base for the future and sort of consolidating everything. They're going to put the advanced R&D into the new head office building. The new head office is expected to have 6 floors.
So think about it this way. They used to have factories.
Yes.
They closed them.
Mm.
Now they build a new building where they consolidate all departments in one place.
Yeah.
It's much better to talk to people from, you know, on different floors in person than trying to set up a Zoom call, you know.
Yeah, so, or in previous times having to go to a different building or a different district or prefecture or anything in order to actually get that done. So I guess it means that they'll have a more kind of synergized and synchronized outlook and plan for the future.
Well, I'm glad that they already spent the Z9 money. So, speaking of Z9 money, they released their financial reports, which we're probably going to talk about next week. they increased their forecast for the next quarter. What do you reckon this to do with?
Probably that little camera that we've been talking about all day.
40,000 pre-orders?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's nice to have a building, isn't it? So,
it is. Yeah. It's going to be good.
Absolutely. And then also Nikon Japan suspended orders for ENEL819 battery till further notice. Remember how like every now and then they say, well, we're going to stop taking orders for those accessories, but then we resume the orders for another accessories. Mm. So they keep doing this. So it seems like ENEL19 is another victim of that, but that's not going to last long, probably about a month or so.
Exactly. In third party news, Photodiox have produced a Pronto LM-NKZ-PRN. It's essentially an autofocus lens adapter. It's like a M lens mount, a Nikon Z mount. It's another autofocus adapter like the Megadapt.
Exactly. So now you can choose which autofocus adapter you want to get for your Z series. So basically they all come with the Leica mount first, and then you add the Nikon F attachment to that, so you can autofocus your AI or AIS lenses.
Exactly.
And now the big one for third party news, Adobe has its Adobe Max conference. Normally it's this time of the year where they announce a lot of things that will come to Adobe software for the next year. So for Photoshop, they announced AI selection, neural filters, and lots of other things. So a bunch of presets as well. But for the Lightroom, they completely redesigned their masking tool. So you now can select sky straight away or a person with a one click of a button. You can also do all sorts of things like layering on masks as well, which is quite nice. They improved metadata workflow as well, I guess, for some of you who like to put their comments everywhere in their files. So that's going to be quite useful. They also add support for new cameras. So now Z9 is already supported for the regular RAW format.
Wow.
But it's not supporting high efficiency RAW format. Again, that's something that we want to see the testing. Want to see how good it is, because there's not much information out. So Richie says that it's almost as good, but again, he doesn't say how much. So I want to see the real test. So let's wait and see. I'm sure that the November Lightroom release will add the support. And they did a bunch of another enhancements, like they speeded up the whole library module. So it is a lot snappier now.
Okay. In other third-party news, Backblaze published their Q3 2021 hard drive failure rates.
Oh, your favorite.
They monitored 191,212 hard drives.
All right, so let's start with this. Backblaze is an online backup company.
Yeah.
So remember when we talked about backup and the importance of having several hard drives to back up your data onto?
Yes.
So one of the options is to actually upload your data into the cloud.
Yeah.
So basically they have those hard drives, and obviously 190,000 of them. So some of them are due to failure. So they published actually the statistics. The good news is that actually not many hard drives fail. So I think the only one that's failed the most, it was 5% of all the hard drives they had, was the Seagate 12 terabyte hard drive. The rest are within 1%, which is not too bad if you have a sample of 190,000 hard drives.
It's very true. There was actually one that had zero failures, which was the HGST 12 terabyte hard drive. So yay for them. And then there were a few that only had, for example, one drive failure, including a Toshiba 4 and 14 terabyte and Seagate 6
and
terabyte.
And also Seagate. And Western Digital 16 terabyte drive is also there. So if you think about it, there's really no bad manufacturer. So technically, it's worth having a hard drive as a backup. It's worth having two hard drives as a backup. So because then you can have copy on one and copy on the second one. But it's always good to check those stats every now and then just to see what the failure rate is. And if you look at previously, so we had most of the failures in 2019 and they kind of slowed down 2020, which means that actually the manufacturing process and quality control has improved. Backblaze also published a quick guide to iCloud and iTunes backups for iPhone and iPad photographers. Now, remember when we talked about use of iPad and I told that I don't really use iPad for photography. I use my MacBook for this if I'm on location. Yeah. And a lot of viewers commented in under the video saying, well, I actually use iPad primarily for my photography workflow. This is a good article for you because it's always good to have automatic backups scheduled, but you can also read that article and there's a couple more things that you can learn out of it.
Excellent. Delkin Devices are offering free photo walks in December. We'll put the Eventbrite link in the description box and in the podcast notes. Delkin devices have been recently in the Nikon spotlight thanks to Rishi's Z9 buffer tests, and we will actually be stocking Delkin devices.
Oh, that's good news.
They reached out to us and said, would you like to stock us? And we were like, yes, please. So we will be getting Delkin in. At the moment, Delkin Black are the fastest CF Express cards on the market anywhere. Their read and write speeds are faster than anything that Lexar, SanDisk, or in XQD Sony produce. So that's very positive.
Fantastic.
They're doing these free photo walks. You can sign up for one. There's London, Birmingham, and Manchester, I believe.
Absolutely. If you'd like to hold your hands with Delkin, do book yourself under Eventbrite link below. Let's move on to review sections. Nikon ZFC review, old school or old fashioned, by Hyun Ralph Jeon YouTube channel.
Cool.
Really cool. He likes it.
Okay, good. We also have a Nikon Z6II time-lapse review by London Viewpoints. Now, Michael, who is friend of the channel, subscriber of the channel, actually reviews the Z6II comprehensively on this, and he breaks down each of the different points in segments there. So if there's some specific aspect that you're interested in, then go and have a look at that.
Absolutely. And this is the second video we want to recommend by him as well, and it ties to our weekend read and watch, is called Illuminated River, which is Thames and London, Hyperlapse from City Cruises.
Cruises.
Illuminated River, which is Thames, Hyperlapse from City Cruises, shot with Z9.
Z6.
Damn it!
One last time.
It's called Illuminated River, Hyperlapse from City Cruises, shot with Z6, by him as well. He uses Z6 for his time lapses, and it's brilliant. It looks beautiful. It just gives us an idea what you can do with your cameras. Go have a look at it. It's the 12 minutes you really, really enjoy.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for watching and or listening. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're on a podcast platform, then a follow and perhaps even a review would be very lovely indeed.
Absolutely. And if you want to find us on the internet other than YouTube, you can find Becky on
Instagram at Rebecca_Danese. And you?
I'm at Konstantin Kochkin. And if you have a rumor to share, do email us at media@graysourcemedia.co.uk. We do definitely want to know your opinion about Z9, 24 to 120s, 100 to 400, you name it. There's so much stuff is coming out now. We want to hear from you.
Very exciting.
Absolutely. And we'll see you on Friday with Richie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.